This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for April 2015. Well, we've pretty well lost Orion below the western horizon as it gets dark. You will, however, still see, falling towards the western horizon, Gemini with the bright stars Castor above and Pollux below, the heads of the heavenly twins. Moving over towards the south is a relatively dark region, no obvious bright stars. It's the constellation of Cancer, but there is in fact a nice little open cluster of stars called the Beehive Cluster, good to view with binoculars. But in fact, there is an interloper, because shining very brightly, just to the left of the Beehive Cluster, is the planet Jupiter. Coming over to Leo, which will be due south in the evening, its brightest star is Regulus, basically the front knees of the lion. I should say that over to the back of Leo, in Coma Berenices and Virgo, is a lovely region of sky called the Realm of the Galaxies. Sadly, you do need perhaps an 8-inch telescope to pick them out, and also, perhaps more importantly, a really dark sky. But it's a wonderful region of galaxies. The Virgo cluster, of which some of these galaxies are a part, is the largest cluster in our part of the universe. In fact, it's the centre of the Virgo supercluster, and our little local group of galaxies is right on its edge. Having risen higher in the sky than last month is Arcturus, the bright star in the constellation of Bootes. And right overhead is Ursa Major. You may just, staying a little bit later in the evening, spot Vega rising in the northeast. It's the bright star in the constellation of Lyra the Lyre. So what about the planets? Well, Jupiter is now 2 months past opposition, but it's still a good month to observe it, high in the southwestern sky during the evening. Its brightness falls slightly from magnitude minus 2.3 to minus 2.1, The angular size drops from 41.5 to 38 arc seconds. It spends this month in Cancer, hardly moving, as it ends its retrograde motion westwards and slowly begins its eastward progress towards Leo. As I've said many times, with a small telescope, you should easily see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the Great Red Spot, and up to 4 of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. And if you look on the night sky page, just put night sky Jodrell Bank into Google or a search engine, the page will come up and it gives, in the highlights, a list of the times when the red spot is facing the Earth. So plus or minus an hour or so, you should have a chance to spot it. Well, Saturn is now rising in the evening, earlier each night, shining at magnitude plus 0.3 and actually brightening somewhat to plus 0.1 during the month. It lies in Scorpius, very close to the left-hand star of the fan that marks its head. Its diameter increases a bit from 17.8 to 18.4 arc seconds. It'll be due south in the early hours of the morning at an elevation of about 22 degrees. The beautiful ring system has now opened out to about 25 degrees to the line of sight, virtually as open as it ever gets. If only Saturn were higher up in the ecliptic, its elevation never gets above 22 degrees, so the atmosphere will hinder our view of this most beautiful planet. And sadly, this will get worse as the years go by for quite some time. Mercury passes behind the Sun, which is called Superior Conjunction, on the 10th of April, so cannot be seen until later in the month. On the 19th, perhaps, shining at magnitude minus 1.4, so quite bright, it should become visible very low in the west-northwest about 45 minutes after the sun has set. It will gradually rise higher in the sky until next month, on the 7th of May, it reaches its greatest elongation, east of 22 degrees. That's the angle between Mercury and the Sun on that day. Well, Mars, having graced our evening skies for many months, we saw a wonderful grouping of Venus, Mars, and a thin crescent moon late in February. It's now sinking finally into the sun's glare. It will lie close to, far brighter, Mercury, around the 19th to 24th of the month, and that's probably about the last time we'll see it for a while. With an angular size of just 4 arc seconds, no details will be seen on its near fully illuminated salmon pink surface. Venus is shining brightly at magnitude minus 4 all month and rises higher in the western sky after sunset as the month progresses. It starts the month in Aries, but climbs up into Taurus on April the 7th, lying just to the east of the Pleiades cluster on the 13th. A telescope will show its angular size increasing from 14 to 16 arc seconds as the illuminated phase shrinks from 78 to 68%. Well, finally, what about some highlights? On April the 9th, before dawn, Saturn will be seen near a waning gibbous moon. And on the 11th to the 13th, about 45 minutes after sunset, Venus lies very close to the Pleiades cluster. That again will make a very nice imaging opportunity. Now, on the 19th of April, there's a real observing challenge. So I do hope it's clear. Mars, Mercury, and a very thin crescent moon will make an equilateral triangle with about 4 to 5 degrees between each of them. That's quite close. Now, the moon will be just under 1 day old, and this is essentially the soonest after new moon that it's possible to see it. Authorities differ, but indicate that the moon may be seen if the angular separation between the moon and the sun exceeds 11 or 12 degrees. And after sunset on the 19th, the separation will be 13.5 degrees, so it may well be possible. Binoculars or a small telescope with a low power eyepiece may well be needed. Please don't use them until the sun has set, but then look up and a little to the left of where the sun has dropped below the horizon. On the 21st, Venus will be seen in the west, close to the waxing crescent moon, just above the star Aldebaran, which lies between us and the Hyades cluster in Taurus. And on April 26th, Jupiter in Cancer lies above the first quarter moon, about 6 degrees. So quite a number of things to look at. Obviously, there's a little bit less darkness now, but nevertheless, a good month to observe the heavens. I hope you do well.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Southern Hemisphere, here's Claire Bretherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the April Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. At the beginning of this month, our clocks go back, giving us lighter mornings and darker nights, and making it much easier to get out and observe. This year, the clocks change on Easter weekend, the night of the 4th to the 5th of April. The timing of Easter, in fact, depends on the sky. In 325 AD, the First Council of Nicaea decreed that Easter should fall on the first Sunday after the first full moon following the Northern Hemisphere vernal or spring equinox, and this has been used to determine Easter in the Western calendar since. This year, the full moon falls in the early hours of Sunday, 5th April, New Zealand time, and will give us the first total lunar eclipse of the year. Unfortunately, this eclipse won't be as spectacular as last October's, with totality lasting only 7 minutes, but it is otherwise well placed for viewing in New Zealand. The penumbral phase, where the moon enters into the outer part of the Earth's shadow, will begin at 10:03 p.m, but the dimming at this stage will be so slight that it will be barely noticeable. The moon will first move into the umbra, the central darker part of the Earth's shadow, at 11:17 p.m, and a partial eclipse will begin, reaching totality between 57 minutes past midnight and 1:04 a.m. The partial eclipse ends at 2:44 a.m, just before the clocks go back at 3. So although the penumbral phase officially finishes at 2:58 a.m, this is in fact over an hour later. Despite the late hour and the limited totality of this eclipse, it's still worth trying to catch a glimpse, as the next total lunar eclipse in New Zealand won't be until 2018. At the time of the eclipse, the moon will be in the zodiac constellation of Virgo, roughly halfway between Jupiter setting in the northwest and Saturn rising in the east. Venus is also visible in our early evening skies, but will drop below the horizon as twilight ends. By the end of the month, however, it won't set until around 2 hours after the sun and will become a stunning evening star. Saturn is in the constellation of Scorpius, a little below and to the left of the bright star Antares, and is fast becoming a must-see evening object. At the beginning of the month, it rises just before 10 p.m. By the end of April, it will be above the horizon before twilight ends. Above Saturn and high in the east after dark is the constellation of Centaurus, with the two brightest stars, Alpha and Beta Centauri, pointing to Crux, the Southern Cross. Named after a half-human, half-horse creature from Greek mythology, Centaurus is one of the largest constellations in our sky, covering an area of 1,060 square degrees. Because of its position along the Milky Way, it contains a large number of bright stars, with over 280 over magnitude 6.5, and 10 brighter than magnitude 3. The constellation also contains a number of interesting star clusters and nebulae. The globular cluster Omega Centauri is perhaps the most famous, and is easily visible to the naked eye at magnitude 3.7. This is by far the largest and brightest globular cluster in the Milky Way, with a luminosity greater than a million suns. Omega Centauri measures around 150 light-years across and contains several million mainly yellow dwarf stars. As with most globular clusters, these stars are incredibly old, with an average age of 12 billion years. The cluster is relatively easy to find, appearing as a fuzzy star around 13 degrees northeast of Gamma Crucis at the top of the Southern Cross. In fact, it was originally thought to be a star and was given the Bayer designation Omega as the 24th brightest in the constellation. Unaided, it appears to cover around half a degree when seen from a dark, rural location. Through binoculars, it is an even more stunning sight, spanning almost a full degree of the sky, twice that of the full moon. With a small telescope, the cluster becomes a glowing, shimmering ball of stars, with many individual stars visible towards the outskirts of the cluster. As well as being exceptionally large and bright, Omega Centauri appears to have formed more slowly than other globular clusters, with two independent periods of star formation over 2 billion years. Because of this, some astronomers have suggested that it may be the remains of a dwarf galaxy that was absorbed into the Milky Way billions of years ago. Centaurus contains two naked-eye open clusters, NGC 3766 and NGC 5460. NGC 3766 is the brightest of these at magnitude 5.3 and is located a little above Alpha Crucis in our skies this month. In 2013, a team of astronomers led by Nami Molavi released the first results from a 7-year study of 27 open clusters. The team identified 36 members of the NGC 3766 cluster that just didn't behave as expected. These massive hydrogen-burning stars are around twice as hot as the Sun. They appear to belong to a new class of variables whose brightness changes by a few thousandths of a magnitude over periods ranging from a couple of hours to just over a day. This type of variation can't easily be explained by current theories. However, the team believes that the fast rotation of many of these objects may provide a tantalizing clue. There is also a bright planetary nebula within the constellation. At magnitude 8, NGC 3918 is within easy reach of small telescopes. The nebula has a slightly oval shape and a lovely blue color, earning it the name the Blue Planetary. Centaurus is also home to a rich variety of galaxies and contains one of the closest galaxy clusters to Earth, the Centaurus Cluster, at around 170 million light-years away. But perhaps the most interesting galaxy in the constellation is NGC 5128, or Centaurus A. At first sight, NGC 5128 appears to be a normal elliptical galaxy, but with a dark dust lane superimposed across the middle. Its peculiar morphology is thought to be the result of galactic cannibalization, with a small spiral galaxy being slowly consumed by a massive black hole at the center of the elliptical. This black hole also emits a relativistic jet detected at radio and X-ray wavelengths. At magnitude 6.84 and located around 4.5 degrees north of Omega Centauri, Centaurus A is the fifth brightest galaxy in the sky and is easily visible in binoculars. Large binoculars should pick out the bright central bulge and dark lane, whilst larger telescopes will reveal more structure. Under exceptional conditions, the galaxy may even be seen unaided, one of the most distant objects visible to the naked eye. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.